You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is the Classic Auto Mall Show. Broadcast from the studios inside the Classic Auto Mall in Morgantown, Pennsylvania, just 1 hour west of Philadelphia at Pennsylvania Turnpike Exit 298. Featuring nearly 1,000 classic, vintage, and barn find vehicles for sale under one climate-controlled roof. Now, here's your host, Classic Auto Mall President and the man with all the toys, Stuart Howden.
And welcome, show number 162. It's a little fumey in here.
A little bit. That's what happens when you have 900 cars under one roof.
Sorry.
I'm getting a little lightheaded. I'm getting a little lightheaded.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not supposed to start cars in the building, except when we do, I guess.
Well, when we receive them back in the photo, they have to drive them in. And right. So sometimes.
And that was an Excalibur that you say?
Possibly.
Well, those are interesting, aren't they?
Yeah,
different.
Yep.
They're certainly different. This one's got big dual quads on it, though, right?
I don't know, but it's got dual exhaust. I know that.
So, speaking of that, how many cars in inventory?
I'm going to just keep guessing the same thing week after week. 950.
Okay. 938.
980. You guys are way off.
I thought you were way busy.
Yeah. We've been busy. So, welcome to the show again. Thanks to the Pat Travers Band for the wonderful theme music. And we'll get right to our guest, who we're delighted to have on the show today, Tim McGrane, the CEO of M1 Concourse. And if you're not familiar with M1 Concourse, a country club racetrack is not quite describing of what you do, right? That's not really what that is, or is it partly that?
You know, we partly come under that description, Stuart. So thank you for having me on your show.
Yes.
The tracks in the category that we're in are sometimes referred to that. Sometimes we're sort of private tracks, but in our case, we're not entirely private.
Yeah, you've got events going on. You're utilizing the space other than just people running around on the asphalt, which is fun in and of itself. But I mean, you've got an event center and all types of events that go on there, on a regular basis.
We have. We try and fill it up as much as we can. You know, given the climate that we are in Michigan, we can't do it year round, which I used to do, you know, with my previous track association, but we certainly make the most of it. And this past weekend, we just finished our big flagship special event, American Speed Festival.
Oh, nice. With the honored guest was Richard Petty?
It was.
You know, I missed, there was a, Bonhams had a sale in Audrain this past weekend, and they had a Richard Petty cowboy hat that was signed by him, and they auctioned it. They started the auction earlier than they said they were, and I missed it. I wanted that thing, doggone it.
Well, they're great hats. I did, Saturday evening, we honored Richard with our Master of Motorsports Award, and there were some people in the room that had got, you know, either a hat. They're called Charlie One Horse. That's the company that makes those.
Right.
They either had those or they had the lookalikes. But regardless, nobody could wear a Charlie One Horse hat like Richard.
No way, no hell. I mean, it's like Corky Coker in those leather boots up to his knees. If I wore those, I would be thrown in prison probably. I bet it was a culture shock, though. You were Arizona and California prior to Detroit. Was that – it's a different world up there, right?
It is. There's no doubt about it. It is very different. I spent the last four decades on the West Coast, moving from England to Palm Springs, and did that on purpose to leave the sort of the weather in England. But I must say, in the last 3.5 years since we've been in this part of Michigan, we're actually really enjoying it. But one of the things that really helped was when we first got here, I was talking to somebody we know quite well. Actually, we're down at Amelia. So I'd moved here in March, and so I'd moved here in February. This would have been in March, and my wife, who's originally from Palm Springs, so he was talking to her, and he said, "Well, how are you enjoying the winters?" And his advice was, you know, December's festive. You know, you've got lights and carols and the holidays. Find a reason to travel sometime during January and sometime during February, because by the time March comes around, it's nearly over.
Right.
Exactly right.
Yeah, exactly. And but, you know, Detroit has had a renaissance up there. I mean, it's pretty amazing what's happened in Detroit over the past, 10 or 12 years. I mean, Dan Gilbert and his redevelopment down there and everything else that's happening there. And, of course, your all's facility. Now, your facility, the M1 Concourse, was a former plant for Pontiac. Is that correct?
It was a GMC plant. There were two major plants in the city of Pontiac. One was referred to as GMC Truck and Assembly Plant West, which we were, and then there's the other one called East, which was further down South Boulevard.
Sure. And of course, this the project started in 2016. Is that correct? Is when it was completed, or
that's when we opened, and we opened with the first phase of garages, which would have been 80 nearly complete, and the 1.5 mile track complete, and it was open with a Dream Cruise weekend, obviously, and perfect weekend to get awareness. The property had been acquired in 2014. From the Racer Trust, which has nothing to do with racing. It's just an acronym for the agency that was founded to repurpose these former automotive sites.
Sure. Well, it's good to see those. I mean, we've repurposed a building here in Morgantown, and it's nice when we can when you can utilize something. So many of these buildings nowadays are built so specific to what they are, like a movie theater. What do you repurpose that as? It better be something with a slope floor and a lot of seats facing a big screen, right?
There we go.
So the events that you do there, I mean, you're doing events, cars and coffee events. You're doing, I guess, ride and drive, just a little bit of everything, right?
We are. In 2021, September 2021, we completed our new event center. And that was really a game changer and certainly part of the business plan for M1. Prior to that, the first 2 years that the property was open, it was very much a private garage community and a private racetrack. You could have rented the track, but you would have really had to find out how to do that. The opening of the event center then transitioned us to a now more public-facing, sure, because we could do a series of events in the event center this past year. I mean, this year we will have 225 events on the books that have done in the event center.
Wow.
On top of the events that we do. And you mentioned we do cars and coffee, and I think if you're an automotive venue, it's almost a great.
Sure.
With any car event, the weather always dictates what the attendance is going to be like. But during the summer months, we stopped counting at 1,500 cars because we got our hands full in making sure we can accommodate more.
Sure.
So that's always good. We do a theme. We run them from April through October. First 2 years, we tried to do March, but the weather always derailed that. So we just decided to start in April. And then we do a Woodward Dream Show, which happens Dream Cruise weekends. And then there's a number of other activities. And then our Motorsports Club, which is the organization, the entity that we formed for our garage owners to get on track. They have a number of events or track time all the time. And then we have our M1 Concourse Car Club, which is our sort of public-facing members club.
Sure. I saw some aerial footage of one of your cars and coffees, and it was amazing. The cars lining the track and the whole area, and just amazing. But the Woodward Dream Cruise got to be on everybody's bucket list. I mean, that's an amazing week of just automotive overload. It's like Monterey in Detroit, right?
It is. I had been being on the West Coast and being involved with, events in Monterey really from the middle 80s. I was very much, either involved with Pebble Beach, or when I ran Laguna Seca, it was about the Monterey Historics. So I had heard about Woodward, and certainly for those people that were trying to do both, and the challenges, especially if you were an automotive manufacturer and you had a presence of Woodward and you were trying to have a presence of Pebble, you'd hear of the challenges of when they happened. And most years they're the same. Not every year. I think sure. Every 6 or 7 years they offset by a week. So, but when I got here, I was very much, what I had assumed it was like was almost spot on. It's very much American car culture,
sure.
Cruisers, hot rods, customs. But one thing I did notice, not just about Woodward Dream Cruise, but just about this area in general, is there are a high quantity of European and exotic and luxury cars, far more than I would ever have imagined. So there's a real broad section of, sort of the automotive appeal. And with Woodward, yes, it's Woodward Weekend. It really starts the weekend before. Although if you talk to the local police departments, they think cruising starts in April and it goes until October.
Yeah, they love it, right?
Well, I don't know if that's the case. Because, from Woodward, the Woodward Dream Cruise goes from Ferndale in the south all the way out to Pontiac in the north. So it's a 17-mile stretch. And, some of the cities embrace it and some of them are challenged by it.
Well, we see that you see that a lot of events that happen that overtake towns, and we see that in East Tennessee and Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg, where they have these cruise and rod runs, and just it's just overwhelming. I mean, there's just, you just, traffic is at a standstill all day long. I don't know how you get anywhere, but you know, it's the enthusiasm of the hobby, which continues to grow. And people, you know, talk about the demise of this classic car hobby or the special interest car hobby. I don't see it. I see a lot of more participation. I see more cars and coffee, more events. I just keep thinking that we're maybe predicting the sky is falling a little too soon.
Well, you know, there certainly is. If you look at the sort of automotive world overall, and I know in this marketplace, the manufacturers, and you hear about it, you know, they're concerned with, you know, young buyers of cars. I mean, there's even young buyers that aren't getting driver's licenses 5 minutes after they can.
What's wrong with those people? What is wrong with those people?
So that's sort of a different culture. But I think the appeal for cars, now it certainly is changed. I mean, I look at the cars that I enjoyed when I was younger and what I like now, you know, there's a vast difference. So I think it's the, and we see it with the events that we do here. We do, one of the themed months that we do is Japanese domestic marks and Asian brands. And the average age of those participants is significantly younger than maybe, you know, the sort of the Ford,
right.
Or this weekend we've got Mopar coming up. But what we also want to do is make sure, and in addition to the theme brands, we still welcome all the other brands. And it's funny, sometimes people come up to us and say, well, you know, you should put the Fords in one areas and the Chevrolets in one areas and all that type of stuff. And I say to them, I say, well, actually, you know what that's called? That's called a car show. And that's what we're not.
Right.
We want that sort of cross-pollination of people that like different cars and cross-generational interaction.
Yeah, absolutely. And we get the same thing. People say, put all the Corvettes in one room. No, that's not how it works. We want a diversity. We want to see the comparison between, you know, yesterday we sold a 2013 Ford Mustang and a 1913 Ford Model T back to back. How cool is that? Yeah. Side by side, you would never see that in most places. They would have them, you know, all the Model Ts separate and all the Mustangs separate. Yeah. And we enjoy having that diversity and seeing the evolution of the automobile right there in front of you.
Yeah. I think one of the points you point about also the demise, not so much the demise. I think one of the things we have to make sure is that when people look at older cars, and I suppose everything's relative, right. Depending on what age we are, is that, you know, don't be afraid of them. Don't look at them sort of like they're, well, you know, first there's a whole group of people that don't know what the third pedal is for.
Right.
And I think that's something we have to change.
Absolutely.
You know, we have to make sure that people can drive it, because some of these older cars, you know, whether it's, you know, the 30s or the 20s or even the early cars, you know, you can find some of those cars very inexpensively.
Sure.
Now, you certainly find some very expensive brass cars or pre-war cars, absolutely. But you can also find them now because, you know, there's not the appeal that there was, but it's still a lot of fun. And it's always good to go out. We go out to Gilmore quite often, where the CCCA Museum and all the other museums are.
Right.
And they have early shows. And it's great to see some of the younger people, you know, with a Model T or a Model A or whatever it may be, a Dodge Brothers car. You know, that gets them into that early appreciation of those early cars, as well as enjoying, you know, Mustangs and some of the Japanese domestic marks, the ZX cars.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with our guest, the CEO of the M1 Concourse, Tim McGrain.
This is the Classic Auto Mall Show. Listen on this station and wherever you get your podcasts, including Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Buzzsprout, Deezer, Listen Notes, Pandora, Player FM, Pocket Casts, Podcast Addict, Podcast Index, Podchaser, Spotify, and, of course, ClassicAutoMall.com.
And we're back with the Classic Auto Mall Show from the Classic Auto Mall Studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. ClassicAutoMall.com if you want to see more of our inventory and things that are going on and events here. Talking with our friend Tim McGrain, who's joining us from, are you in Pontiac today?
Yes.
Yeah, Pontiac, Michigan. I miss Pontiac. Pontiac was a great brand, and I'm still mad about it. I guess I need to get over it. It's been, 22 years now. Do people still have a fond spot for Pontiacs in your part of the world?
Absolutely. You know, in fact, earlier this year, we had a reunion of Pontiac Fiero owners that we hosted here. because the Fiero plant is just the other side of downtown.
Right.
And it was sort of like the homecoming, and what a passionate group of people came from, you know, all over the country.
Sure. Sure. And your background was has been cars for a number of years. I know that you started, I don't know if you started out, but you worked with Rick Cole in the auction business in Monterey back before Monterey was even really a thing. I mean, Rick Cole basically invented the Monterey auction and car scene, right? I mean, was there something else before him?
No, I mean, there was Steve Earle's historic races and then the Concours.
Right.
So, you know, Lauren Tryon and Jay Heumann had taken the Concours from, I think in the early 70s, it was having some challenges and they took over. And I think they were sort of somewhat charged with, well, if you can do a better job, do it.
Right.
And off they went. And that was taking place. And Rick, who was an avid vintage racer, but also had his auction business, mostly on the West Coast, saw an opportunity there. And he had originally gone to Steve Earle and said he wanted to do an auction at the track. And Steve wasn't that enthusiastic at the time. So he started it downtown. And it took off. Now, if you look at the sales results then and you look at prices now, you'd like to be able to go back and acquire a few cars.
Yeah, so, raise your hand a few times, right?
Yeah, so it started off 85. I started working for it in 87. 88 was a bit of a milestone year. It was there was a 250p Ferrari that was Rick's headline car. It sold for just under $3 million, which wow. At the time was the highest Ferrari that had ever sold at auction and the third highest car behind two Bugatti Royales. So that sort of put Monterey a little bit on the radar screen. You know, the following year, the market was just on a tear. You know, Rick, one of his specialties was sports and race cars, and their deals with those were just going on fire. So 89 came around and we went two nights with Monterey, not knowing if we could even get 180 cars to run across for nights. And then the market was on fire, and then Christmas came in the following year and the floodgates opened.
Yeah. And then of course now come full circle with Christie's has bought Gooding and now they're going to come back to the arena and, be interesting to see how that all shakes out and who stands and who falls. I mean, Gooding's built a hell of a great auction business there. And learn from the masters of watching these guys. I mean, back in the glory, you know, we call it the glory days of racing, but the glory days of the auction business, Dean Cruz and Kirk White and Tiny Gould and, Leo Gephardt and, Tom Barrett and Rush Jackson. And you worked for Barrett Jackson a little while as well, too, didn't you?
I did. I had worked for, Rick for a number of years, and then he merged his company with Don Williams at the Black Hawk Collection. And Richie Klein, who was at the Imperial Palace Auto Collection, and the three of them formed this partnership called World Classic Auction and Exposition Company, which was a bit of a mouthful. We did the Monterey auction for a while. We did a number of auctions, Las Vegas, Monterey, Newport Beach. And then Don decided the auctions weren't something that he wanted to continue. We wanted to go back to the private sales. So he sold the auction company. And I was looking at I needed to be busier than sort of private sales. So I got approached by it was a group at the time. It was the early days it was when the dot-coms were taking off and everybody was trying to form a dot-com. And Barrett Jackson, Hemmings Motor News, and Speed Vision got together to form this partnership called eClassics.com. And I got approached by the people at Speed Vision. They were Southern California-based. Went to meet with the Eric brothers in Bennington, Vermont. And then obviously I knew Craig really well and ended up sort of joining Barrett Jackson and was there for a few years.
Sure. Well, I mean, everybody was on that dot-com bust. I mean, when eBay bought Cruz back in 1998 or 9, right in that era, I went to work there for a while and it was interesting with eBay money. And I'll never forget Simon Rothman, who basically kind of started the eBay motor side of eBay. Said to me, my first gig was I got hired in December and we did Scottsdale. And he said, now I want you to wine and dine these guys out there at this event. And I said, no problem. Gave me a gold American Express card. And okay. So I did it. I got a call in February. He said, I want to talk to you about your American Express bill. And I thought, oh no, what did I do wrong? And he goes, I thought I told you to wine and dine them. I go, yeah. He goes, doesn't look like you did enough of it on here. Do better next time. So the next night I walked into Morton's Steakhouse in Scottsdale and bought dinner for everybody in the whole restaurant. I said, I hope that'll work. So, but you know, that was the way money was flowing back then.
It was, I don't say it was different times. The auction business has gone through a transition, you know, whether you call it a change or transition. First of all, the dollars involved today's with the price of cars are significant. There's no sure. doubt about it. I mean, we thought they were high back in the day, but they're not. It was a different time. I mean, there was a time when, you know, the same auctioneer team worked for four or five different auction companies.
Right.
You know, the auctioneers that we had at Rick Coles were the same people that Barry Jackson used, that Brian Jackson hired, that Don and Richie used when they did their Vegas auction. They did a couple of one-off auctions that Bob Pass used to do down in St. Louis. And that would never happen these days.
Sure.
You know, we would just, in fact, our office manager, who handled the books of Rick Cole, went over and handled the books at Barry Jackson for right. a number of years.
That collusion doesn't happen anymore. They're pretty protective of those names and phone numbers.
It was different times, and I think that's the same across the board.
But, you remember the Cruz brothers? They always had the tuxedo with the red bow tie and the ruffly shirt, and you know they had that look, and that was what they were. And Dean Cruz would tell you, he goes, "I don't know anything about cars." He goes, "I know how to auctioneer." He goes, "That's all that matters." You know, it was fun times watching the evolution of all that, and Sports Car Market magazine kind of playing a part in the evolution of that, and seeing all the changes that have happened over the years. Yet it still is a popular format, even with all the online, the bring a trailer and the Hemmings and everybody's doing online. And of course, eBay, it's still a popular format. People like to go to the auctions and participate in those.
It is. I mean, the auctions, you know, are entertainment. I mean, if you take some of the larger auctions, you know, when you go down to it, it really only takes two people for an auction.
Right.
You know, somebody to sell a car, you just need the person that wants it and somebody to keep it going. But you look at the thousands of people go there because it is entertaining. That's obviously what's made the television coverage of auctions really popular.
Sure.
You know, so the entertainment factor to it, not necessarily just for the hardcore people. And if you take an event and, you know, whether it's an extreme case as Barrett Jackson, when you've got, you know, all the sort of the sideshow for a better description, you know, that, you know, that consumes, you know, you take the whole place at Westworld and the size of the facility, you know, and some of the other events. But then you go on the other extreme, you do what, you know, RM Sotheby's do and Gooding and Company have doing with their very much focused, you know, catalog auctions. They both work.
Yeah, they absolutely. And there seems to be plenty of business for everybody. You know, we opened our place. We've consigned in 7 years. We've consigned almost 7,000 cars. Nobody's going, "Oh, we're not getting the cars that we used to." Meekum's not hurting. No. Barrett's not hurting. RM's not hurting. Everybody, it seems like there's plenty to go around, at least for now. Let's hope that continues as time goes on.
Yeah. I think you've got a more educated or informed buyer if they want to be.
Sure.
Now, you know, if you get somebody that's going out and a bunch of friends and they have a few drinks, they turn around and like something, put their hand up, and the next morning it's not what they were. That's all right. But they had the opportunity to be informed if they didn't want to be. So I think that's one of the things. It is, you know, and then the quality of some of the cars that are coming up for
wow.
auction.
Well, stuff that we never thought we'd see come to a public auction. So back to M1 Concourse, how many private garages do you have there now? Over 200?
We do. So we have the property is 87 acres.
Right.
We have a mile and a half track. So, you know, for a lot of people, 87 acres is a large piece of property. But when you sort of put a mile and a half track in it, I refer to it as either compact or intimate.
Right.
Because my point of reference was coming from Laguna Seca, which sat on 550 acres. We have 250 now privately owned garages or garage condos, as they're called. You can't live in them. They're not zoned for residential and they're not zoned to operate a business out of. But a lot of businesses get done, and there's certainly some very comfortable places to stay the night if you're up late playing cards and drinking.
Well, and that's the nice thing. I mean, some of them are as big as 4,800 square feet, I saw, which is, you know, big. That's not nothing.
There are. And the interiors are all very different, and they're across the board. There are some on one extreme there. You know, when we sold them, we sold a white box with utilities inside and the build out. So some people have either put, you know, they've got their cars, they may have a lift or two, and they've got, you know, the obligatory, you know, TV, fridge, and the couch. And then others could be in Architectural Digest. They're right. completely off the charts with their design.
Sure. And there's more and more of these type of facilities happening around the country. Is more going to be better for everybody? Is the rising tide lifting all ships, or is it going to be too crowded of a space and those that are early are going to be okay?
Well, I think it's the marketplace you're in. There are certain marketplaces. If you go look, Monticello in upstate New York, that's been around for a long time, and that seems to be doing well. And their track is, you know, can be used for racing. You go down south, you've got the Concourse Club just in Opa-locka, just outside Miami. They haven't been around long, and they're doing well. So that marketplace, they've got a marketplace they know to appeal to. I know there's the new T1 track that's opening up, you know, just outside, I think, in the West Palm Beach area.
Right.
I think they tried to resurrect the old Marosa racetrack, and that didn't happen.
Right.
So that's coming online. Up in our part of the world, there's Autobahn out in Juliet, outside Chicago, and that's been around for a number of years. And then also down south, Atlanta Motorsports Park, and you go out on the West Coast, you know, two high-profile ones are Thermal in the Palm Springs area,
right.
Apex Motor Car Club outside of Phoenix. One of the things that we've noticed, and some of our owners have places in other places. So I think, you know, if you're here during the summer, you may winter in Phoenix, you may winter down in the Florida area. So these owners, because they've done very well in life, they may have a couple of places. So the owners talk, and myself or my counterparts, you know, we will talk. And one of the things that I get asked is that, you know, have you created the owners community that you have? And I wouldn't say it's anything that we've done. We certainly foster it. But one of the benefits we have is that nearly most of our owners are 15 or 20 minutes away. Whereas wow. In some of the other locations, like I used to live in Scottsdale, in McCormick Ranch, the center of Scottsdale, that was an hour and 15 minutes to get to Apex. And a lot of the people were another 30 minutes north. So that's a 3-hour commitment to go around. And the reason of the distance is if you're building a project like these days, you have to find the amount of property that's going to make a project work at the price point that's going to fit the business model. But then you have to be mindful of, and we refer to it as sound, and our neighbors call it noise.
I like your version.
it's a factor that is always out there. And sure. And doesn't matter how far you go, that there is going to be somebody. It could be a single house. It could be a farm owner. So that's the challenge as well. We're a very unique case in the sense that, you know, we're a track in a metropolitan area, and because we were built on what was a former, you know, derelict GMC site, I think that everybody was so pleased that somebody was just going to do something with it, and it's been significantly transformed. And I think it will be challenged to do what we do in another metropolitan area.
Sure. Well, there's no land, but the noise factor is, you know, makes sense. I mean, I know people that move from the city to the country and have to buy a noise machine that replicates sirens and doors and cars and all the noises of the city because they can't sleep when it's dead quiet.
So. Yeah. Well, you get people that, you know, move near an airport and they complain about planes.
Well, we could do a whole show on that, Tim. Anyway, such a pleasure having you on the show today. We really enjoyed speaking to you, and I'm sure we'll see you at one of the events coming up soon, and we'll certainly have you back on again. I loved our conversation. I still have, you know, 12 pages of notes. So,
Stuart, thank you for the opportunity. Great catching up with you. We saw each other just sort of recently, the Rad and the Hunt.
Yeah.
Good to catch up with you. And as you say, we'll see you soon sometime on the show circuit.
Great. Thanks. Tim McGrane, CEO of the M1 Concourse. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Ever since the first time you saw it, perhaps even as a child, you knew you wanted one. Now, you're at a point in your life where you have the means to buy and keep one. Your significant other is even in agreement. But where and how can you find one? And trust you know as much as you can about it before the purchase. That's why there's ClassicAutoMall.com. 1,000 classic vehicles of almost every conceivable make, model, and year. All under one climate-controlled roof. You can visit and look to your heart's delight. Or do everything online from the comfort of your own home. Shipping nearly everywhere worldwide. Classic Auto Mall can make your dream come true. Visit the World Wide Web. ClassicAutoMall.com.
The Classic Auto Mall is like going to the greatest indoor car showroom in the country. With more than 1,000 classic and collectible vehicles for sale via consignment in our 8-acre climate-controlled showroom, we've got something for everyone. We're open to the public most days. Plus, you can easily search our inventory online at classicautomall.com. Buying and selling via consignment is safe, easy, and secure. Plus, we advertise, sell, and ship worldwide. Find your dream classic vehicle at classicautomall.com.
This is the Classic Auto Mall Show. Listen on this station and wherever you get your podcasts, including Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Buzzsprout, Deezer, Listen Notes, Pandora, Player FM, Pocket Casts, Podcast Addict, Podcast Index, Podchaser, Spotify, and, of course, ClassicAutoMall.com.
And we're back with the Classic Auto Mall Show from the Classic Auto Mall Studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. Great guest again. And what a great facility up there. And if you ever get a chance to make it to Detroit, you should see his place and the Woodward Dream Cruise, obviously, and the Henry Ford Museum, because they do have a Bugatti Royale, which he was saying was the most expensive car sold prior to this Ferrari selling in 1986. Oh. It was a Bugatti Royale, one that Tom Monahan of Domino's bought.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I helped fund that back in the day because I bought a lot of Domino's pizza.
Right.
But it was delicious. Not that it's not. Never mind.
Yeah. Don't go down that rabbit
hole. Don't go into pizza wars.
We're hoping for some sponsorship, right?
All right.
So where we sold cars last week? How about Elverson, Pennsylvania, Forest Hill, Maryland, Ole, Pennsylvania, New Church, Virginia, Tampa, Florida, which, hey, put those people in your prayers.
Oh, yeah,
I know
boy.
You'll hear this. It'll be after the fact and you won't. No, but man, wow. They just unfair how much they've gotten bombarded down there. Two hurricanes.
I know a couple of people that are going to ride it out.
So. No. You hear what they said on the news today? This is horrible. They said, write your name on yourself in Sharpie.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, the size of the auto mall here.
Yeah.
Water coming in that high.
So when we return to the bummer show.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, whatever it is you listen to this show in the future, there's always going to be some kind of disaster. So if it moves you, please go to redcross.org and donate whatever you can.
How about we sold some more cars? Ambler, Pennsylvania.
Hey.
West Grove, Pennsylvania. Lafayette, Tennessee. Coon Rapids, Iowa, three times. Malvern, Arkansas. St. Louis, Missouri. Macungie, Pennsylvania. West Sacramento, California.
Hey, now.
We love having guests on, and Tim McGrain's wife works for the Pebble Beach Concord Elegance, and she's going to be on in 3 weeks. So we'll have a fun time talking to Cindy on the show as well, too. We're going to have them on together, and thought that we had plenty to talk about to both. So, you know, and plus, I don't know if I could juggle two guests.
Yeah, right. I'm sure you could.
Like, stick and move.
That's pretty cool. They're like a power car
they're
couple.
They're a power car couple. They know everybody.
Kind of like you and Kathy.
Yeah, kind of like me and Kathy, only different.
That's right.
Everywhere you go, I mean, if you go with, it's like Judy Stropas who helps get us guests. Anywhere you go with her, everybody knows her. And same with Tim and Cindy McGrain. Mm-hmm. I mean, just you don't walk into a car event or auction or whatever and not everybody knows them. So you hang closely to them to pick up some nibbles.
And he had a very nice suit. He did.
He always looked nice.
It was really good.
Buttoned up.
I should have had my suit.
Yeah.
I have a sport coat I'm going to wear tonight. I'm headed to Hershey.
Mm-hmm.
Just got back from Audrain, the Newport, Rhode Island Concours d'Elegance.
Do they still have the Super Duper Looper at Hershey?
Huh?
The Super Duper Looper?
I think they do.
They do.
It's a ride.
Yeah, okay. I'm certain they do.
Not at the car show, but
I'm sorry, I just ran.
You don't want to put the old people on that. Super Duper Vomitron, whatever you call it. So, but Audrain, the weather was perfect, and it hasn't been very nice in the past couple of years. A lot of rain and windy and cold. But we had 250 something cars at the Concours, and a beautiful Maserati one, which is a post-war winner of a Concours d'Elegance, which is good to see. I mean, you know, most of the Concours are pre-war cars that sell. Pre-war meaning pre-World War II, 1940 and older. But they had some amazing cars, an amazing event. We had a display at the Weathering, which is on Friday, and took our truck and trailer up there and ran into our buddy Luigi Canetti, which we got a picture of. Randy, you'll have to show that to the people so you'll see that I'm hobnobbing with famous people.
And Luigi Canetti is, remind us who he is.
Yeah. Oh, he was on our show, first and foremost.
Right,
Steve.
So you can go back and listen to that, but I forget. What's his title?
His title is, his father was the importer of Ferraris, for the first importer of the Ferraris into the United States of America in the 50s, and was dear friends with Enzo Ferrari. Mr. Ferrari, as Luigi kindly reminded me to say. And he's been involved in racing, and Luigi Jr., who we had on the show, Luigi Sr. is long since gone.
Right.
And Luigi Jr. been involved in all kinds of different aspects of the automotive world. And he's kind of one of those famous people in the car world. Nobody else might know him walking down the street. He's not a Jay Leno. Not that that's good or bad. He's just not that recognizable. Mm-hmm. But when you're at an event like the Concorde Elegance in Newport, Rhode Island, everybody knows who Luigi Canetti Jr. is.
Nice.
And it was a really nice event, and, they do a great job. And the kind of the headquarters is at the International Tennis Hall of Fame, which is a cool old building in downtown Newport. And the food in Newport is.
Really?
I had a lobster roll. That,
I was going to say seafood was probably.
Man, there's a tear coming down my eye right
now. That just, good.
It was beautiful. We had a great time, and I took Kathy, which was a huge mistake because now she's like, I'm never not going to this event.
That's awesome.
I was just praying it was going to be raining and cold and misty and windy, and she'd say, wants to go do that.
Go alone next year.
Yeah, go alone. And then we've got Hershey going on this week, which will be last week when you hear us for the first time. That's looks like the weather's going to be perfect for that. Mm-hmm. And then Friday morning we head to Chattanooga, which is October the no. Yes. October the 11th?
11th, 18th.
What is today?
It's 9th.
I don't even know what day it is. That's scary.
Yep.
I've been gone too long. Yeah, October 11th through the 13th is Chattanooga. Hershey is October 8th through the 11th. They're usually always around this time of year, so if you didn't make it this year, you'll make it next year. And we ran into Corky Coker at the AACA Museum last night. They had their annual fundraiser night at the museum. That's a neat place. It's really well done. The dioramas are really cool that have the cool backgrounds and the paintings and the murals and the displays, and they're very proactive there.
Yes.
They're not just a static display where you put something out there and then you go, oh, okay, well, we'll just rest on our laurels. And then there's no reason for anybody to compel people to come back to the place. So, by having a different display and different things going on, it allows people to come back more often. So, and how cool is that yesterday selling the 2013 Ford and then the 1913 Ford Model T we sold first. And the very next car we sold was the 2013. 100 years apart, and look at those two cars side by side.
Yeah.
And a runabout was the Mustang, theoretically or technically, of its generation.
That's right. They call it the Volkswagen Beetle of the day.
Yeah. I mean, it was the runabout was a sports car, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, a two-seater wasn't very practical. Most automobiles in the teens and 20s had to be practical because they were expensive relative to the time. So you couldn't just buy a car as a toy or a hobby.
Right.
You know, you had to buy it because it, and so to have a runabout was like having the Mustang of the day.
That's right. So, I just saw a little one of these teaser clickbait things that said the CEO of Ford says he's tired of building boring cars.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you go past the car lot, what color are the cars? They're gray, they're white, and they're black.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I drove through a Ford lot, and I mean, other than the trucks, there's only, they've got the,
Well, they have the Mustang still.
With the Mustang still, right. Yes. But the Explorer and that other Edge, is it? The smaller one.
Right.
And that's kind of it.
As people mispronounce the Escape.
Yeah, Escape. But they're really a truck company, and I think
they're all truck companies. Mm-hmm. General Motors didn't even make, do they even make a car other than the electric Bolt?
I don't think so. They have Buick cars.
But yet, here's the funny thing, and I think we even said this a week ago or a couple of weeks ago. BMW makes a ton of cars. Mm-hmm. Toyota makes a ton of cars. Nissan makes a ton of cars. Mercedes makes a ton of cars. I mean, why are we not making cars? Do we know something they don't know, or do they know something we don't know, or does the lime and the, you know, I don't know. Hmm. Somebody give me an answer.
Podcast at classicautomall.com.
Yeah. And then you can give us all the answers, or you can
tell us what Ford you drive.
Or berate us for being idiots. Which we try not to be.
A lot of Broncos on the road, I've noticed lately.
Yeah, I see a lot of those. Yeah. And they're all different sizes. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's little smaller ones, and I wasn't really paying attention too much how the size difference of the sport versus the big four-door one that's almost it looks like it's twice as big.
Yeah, it is almost twice as big. Yeah, it's really
so.
Those come 2-door and 4-door. So
gotcha.
It can be longer or shorter.
And you can get a soft top or a hard top or any of the variables.
Great looking trucks.
They really are. They did a nice job on those. Retro doesn't always work well, and there's a few that come to mind that I won't point out. But just some. I mean, the Dodge Challenger was spot on. It was perfect as a as a retro design, if you will. But some of them just I don't know.
The Challengers drove great. Great too.
Yeah, they did, and they were just good. I'd never forget when that was that about 2008 when those Challengers came back out. Saw one in red with the aluminum wheels, and it was like, damn, that's a fine looking car.
Yeah, and I just drove a rental, and it was a 6-cylinder, but it was fun.
Right,
fun car to drive, roomy yet it's very sporty.
So we're coming to the end of our time on America's Web Radio. We've got a couple of more episodes on there. We've been leaning towards the show on YouTube and kind of pushing towards YouTube. We still love people that listen to us on, you know, podcast sites when you're traveling, or you can download it, or, you know, all the different sites that you have. But we're kind of getting away from traditional radio. We did a little bit down in Philly on a radio station, and not sure that it was, you know, hitting our core audience like we like. And cars are so visual. You know, we get the one complaint we get about the show, other than they hate me. The one complaint that we get about the show is, I heard you talking about something and I didn't really know what it was. Mm-hmm. And I had to go and like do my research, which is fine. I mean, that's great. Go do your research. But it's such a visual thing. It's nice when we can talk about new inventory. We can actually show the inventory.
Yeah.
So, but we've had a great, I mean, we've been on America's Web Radio for now three years. We've been on there, and it's been wonderful, and it certainly elevated our audience and got us to where we are today. So for that, we're deeply appreciative of that. And but it's time for us to kind of focus our funds and our effort towards the YouTube side of it. We think that's the future of what we're doing, and if we're wrong, then you can all laugh and send us emails.
You can't listen and you can't watch YouTube while you're driving or you're working on your classic or whatever that. So a lot of people do listen to podcasts on their phone or their Alexa or their Google speaker, and you can find the podcast if you're listening on America's Web Radio and that's your usual go-to. You can find our show on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and Google Podcasts, Podcast Index, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, a real big one. TuneIn is a big one. Podcast Addict, like they say, wherever you find podcasts.
Yeah, wherever.
And if you don't know, and you're maybe an older person, ask your son or grandson, and they'll hook you right up.
Yeah. When we return, we'll discuss some of our new arrivals.
Excellent.
At the Classic Auto Mall Show.
The Classic Auto Mall has more than 1,000 vehicles for consignment in our huge 8-acre climate-controlled showroom.
It's a real indoor mall.
If you'd like to know all the advantages of buying and selling a car through consignment, the information is available on our website, or you can talk to a classic car specialist who can answer all your questions. It's easy, safe, convenient, and it doesn't matter where you are. We sell worldwide. See our huge selection of classic and collectible vehicles at classicautomall.com.
And we're back with the Classic Auto Mall Show from the Classic Auto Mall Studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania on a whatever day it is, fill in the blank.
Hopefully it's sunny where you are.
Hey, hopefully it's sunny. And we send our prayers to the people down in Florida and North Carolina.
That's
my goodness.
Milton. Yeah. Some of the biggest hurricanes have the stupidest names.
It's a weird name. And the poor people in North Carolina, my goodness.
Yeah.
Unexpected.
Still suffering.
Unexpected, though. I mean, you just don't expect a hurricane to have that kind of impact that far north and inland. I know that when we lived in Raleigh and a hurricane came, and I can't even remember which one it was, we were deeply affected by it. I mean, we were 150 miles from the coast, but the wind and the rain and the power, and we were out of electricity. It was in July or August, I think it was, and it was miserable hot, and we were taking baths in our swimming pool.
Yeah.
No matter when you listen to this podcast over the next few years, there are going to be people who still need help fixing whatever they need to fix.
From right now on. Yep. And 2 years from now. I mean, they were taking the bulldozers and picking up the trash because they're worried that's going to become projectiles for this Milton coming up after Helene. And they're trying to get rid of the trash. But where does that go?
Yeah.
It's got to, landfills.
Big trash landfill, and then you blow around from there.
Yeah, we go down, there's this road you can take that parallel, I've said this before, down I-75, and it's a 2-lane road, and there must be a 15 or 20 landfills on this 200-mile stretch of road. I mean, that's a lot of trash because these things are massive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we're going to do with all this. It's just getting worse and worse and worse, but I don't guess we can solve it here.
We can try. But
we can sure talk about it and try.
If we come up with a good idea, though.
Yeah.
Or if you have a good
idea. Podcast at ClassicAutoMall.com. We'll share it.
We'll tell everyone.
We'll tell everybody.
Yeah.
Some of the new arrivals this week. How about the 1974 Volkswagen Type 2 Combi bus?
Ooh.
Orange and white. See, Kathy makes fun of me the way I say
orange.
I say orange.
Orange. That's what I say.
Orange. It's orange.
Orange.
Is it syrup or syrup?
Syrup.
Syrup. Exactly. Syrup. Syrup. Not syrup.
How does she say it?
She says syrup, and she's wrong.
Oh, so she's from Missouri.
I love you, honey, but you're wrong. And she's from Missouri. So you got all that going
Dang.
On.
Dang.
So,
it's a lot to remember. It's a lot to remember.
All right. Where were we? Were we talking about cars?
Combi. Bus. Talking about the combi
the bus.
Does that have the pop-up top?
It does not.
It does not. It's orange and white over orange and white. 13,706 actual miles.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. Garage kept. Eye-catching restoration. And usually these things are restored. You say, well, only 13,000 miles. Why would it be restored? It was kept in the garage. Why would it be restored? Well, it fades and things happen in, you know, 50. Well,
aging.
It's, you know, 55, 57 years it is
sure.
now that it's old. And it's got the 1600cc flat four. With a four-speed manual. I'll never forget, we had a Volkswagen bus we were taking from Salisbury, Maryland to Ocean City, Maryland. And that thing was getting blown around on the highway like a ping pong ball.
Yeah,
I mean, it was just, and no power to overcome it.
Yeah, it's only about 30 miles, and you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah, you're like,
and flat, this too. It's dead flat.
Dead flat. So it's like, whoa. By the way, for those of you on the podcast sites, I'm making the whoa look.
Be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel, Classic Auto Mall YouTube.
There you go. We're about to past 5,000 subscribers.
Yeah,
where's our applause?
That's impressive.
Applause.
Yeah, where's our applause? I had a button. I used to have a button.
Yeah,
that said
well,
applause. And
we can put it in late. Here we go.
That's your job. There you go. All right.
Ooh,
that's a smattering of applause.
That's quite the smattering. Other new. Oh, there you go.
There you go. 5,000 followers on YouTube.
Thank that's you. It. Sounded and like 5,000 clients.
And 62,000 on TikTok,
this,
which is still active.
This one too.
Yeah. How about the other new arrival, the 1988 Chevrolet Camaro IROC Z28? Those are so cool. Bright red over saddle, which is the best color.
That's the car to have.
It's the car to have. Now, it's a one-owner car with 59,000 original miles.
Nice.
Pampered and garage kept. It's got the 305 cubic inch V8 with a five-speed manual.
Yes.
Which is that kind of unusual, the five-speed manual?
Probably.
I mean, with the 305, not the 350.
Right. Probably more automatic sold than manuals.
I would say so, too, because at that point in time, people weren't really hip to the whole manual thing.
Right.
Although, I love driving my manual transmission car. I love it. It's a lot of fun. Unless you're in stop-and-go traffic.
Yeah. Yep. Traffic is the worst.
When we were coming back from Audrain, it rerouted us from 95 to the Merritt Parkway. And 60-mile drive on the Merritt Parkway took about 3 hours and 10 minutes.
Did you have a stick shift? Were you driving?
I did not, thank God.
Right.
And that's the one thing I said to Kathy. Thank God we didn't take the stick, because I was already livid.
Did your car have the auto drive, the adaptive cruise, where you can just let go of it and it'll drive?
I've never tried it in stop-and-go traffic.
Oh, it's the best.
See, I never tried. That's great. That's a good idea, because the problem with traffic, let me get started here, is that you got everybody's all nicely together, and then there's like that one guy who's got 42 car lengths between him and the car in front of him. You say, well, what does that matter? Well, that matters to the people that are behind you, because now you're just, that reaction is continuing to get worse and worse and worse, and the backup is more and more and more. And there's so many people that leave too much room. You don't have to be right on the guy's bumper, but be two car lengths away from him.
Well, on the adaptive cruise, you can set how close you want to follow. But as the car in front of you moves, it moves. And if it has also the lane control.
Right.
I drove a Genesis up in the work zone up the northeast extension of the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Normally, if you're on the highway at speed, about every 45 seconds, it says, hey, touch the wheel.
Right.
I didn't touch the pedals or the steering wheel for 20 minutes.
Wow. And see, I have all these things in these cars of mine, and I never pay any attention to it.
Oh,
you just really need to sit down in the driver's seat of your car with nowhere to go and go, all right, let me figure all this out. Oh, that's massaging seat. That's the stone massage feature. That's the adaptive cruise control.
You never get to it.
And even just changing the colors in the car, it changes like colors on the dash.
ambient color.
And just for doing long distance drives like you do, I mean, that's, you better learn that.
All right.
Don't let me down.
Yeah. How about the 1998 Dodge Viper RT10? Viper red over charcoal and black, 23,000 actual miles, 525 or so horsepower,
right,
estimated. 8-liter V10, Tremec T56 manual. It's got the one-piece removable roof. Is that called a Targa roof on a Viper? And I don't really, never heard them referred to as a Targa, per se.
Technically it is, but it's, I don't think they call it.
They don't call it that.
It's probably a thirsty V10.
Yes. I would imagine. And this one was well maintained. New arrival, the 1978 Toyota Corolla sedan.
Cool.
Chrome yellow over black. Got the fender rear view mirrors.
Yep.
Fresh paint and interior, 1.6 liter Hemi. That thing got a Hemi in it? Why, yes, it does. And what people don't realize is the Hemi is not necessarily a big V8 motor with a gazillion horsepower.
No.
Hemi is the way the combustion chamber works. And that's about as technical as you're ever going to hear me get on this show. Because I'm not really that technical.
Good move.
Don't tell anybody. I have no idea what I'm talking about. JDM mirrors, which are the ones aforementioned mirrors on the
extended
fenders.
Out there.
Midnight Club Ready. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that mean?
Midnight Club Ready. I don't know what that
you
means.
Wrote it.
No, I did not write that.
Oh, Peter
one.
Wrote that one?
Yeah, that's
all right. Well, we'll have to call Peter.
Peter 6753. Yeah, that would be Peter.
Because we know you wrote odd, he wrote even.
That's right.
Vice versa.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
All right. Other new arrival. How about the 2008 Aston Martin V8 Vantage convertible? Boy, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, just like.
This one is Mercury Silver Metallic over Sahara Tan. Oh, this thing's all used up. 13,000 miles on.
Barely broken.
Mine's got 5,000.
Really?
Wink, wink, nod, nod. Yeah, 5,200 or something. This thing. 13,000 miles is nothing. Well-maintained, 4.3-liter double overhead cam V8, 6-speed automatic. This is a luxury supercar. This thing has got performance, but it's comfortable, and it's enjoyable to drive. And it's some of these things. A Viper is it's a lot to drive. It's a lot. I mean,
that's
it's
a toy.
It's
that's
a,
more
toy.
Of a toy.
Yeah. It's not something you want to take, as we were just talking, in traffic jams. You know, it's something you want to get out on the open road, or you want to get through some of these curvy back roads and go have fun with it. But
And it looks so darn good.
Oh my God, it does. Next in line is the 1966 Ford Mustang Fastback, silver frost over black and ivory. I don't know. There's something about a fastback body style on a Mustang that's about as cool as they ever
get. It is. But didn't you say you didn't see them a lot when you were growing up?
Didn't know about them much. There was a lot of cars that I didn't know about that I thought I knew, but I really, I would pay attention, but not enough. I was reading Road and Track and Car and Driver and Motor Trend and Popular Hot Rodding and Hot Rod and whatever other else one. But this one, like I said, the great fastback lines, 302 cubic inch V8. Four-wheel power disc brakes. It's got a top-loader manual. Great color combination. That silver frost really has – it really makes those lines work well. And silver's not always the greatest car for greatest color for a car. Thank you.
I think fastbacks would look good in anything.
I think so, too. We had one in that turquoisey blue.
Yeah, yeah.
Turquoisey. Is that a word?
Turquoisey.
That sounds like a town in Jersey. Turquoisey.
Turquoisey, New Jersey. And
yeah.
I think it would look good in primer, actually. Yeah. They're just great-looking cars.
We were talking about do barn finds still exist, and are there cool ones out there? But everybody I talk to has got a great barn find story as recently. You know, not just from years and years ago, but I was when we were at Audrain talking to people, and somehow the subject of barn finds came up. Well, we talk about Classic Auto Mall and how we used to have 400 barn finds in here, and people say, "Oh, you know, I just found a Lancia Aurelia, or I just found a this or that in a barn, you know, a couple of months ago." And it's like you keep thinking those are going to be gone, but they're not. They're still out there, and they're still missing cars that have got to be somewhere. Now they may be in the bottom of a junkyard, which you'll never find.
Right, of course.
Now I imagine there's a lot of them that are.
Sure.
Can you imagine that a used up, beat up, beat to crap Ferrari from the 50s in 1961 is probably they just trashed it and totaled it and threw it in a, you know.
You know, it's easy to get jaded in our little suburban communities,
right.
But I just drove across the state last weekend, and it's Pennsylvania's a big, big state, and it's a lot of agricultural, and I'm seeing barns, and that's just from the turnpike.
Right.
Imagine you get off the turnpike, which I had to. Unfortunately,
not by your own volition.
There's a lot of sheds and barns back there.
I was going to say I drove cross country, and of course, you've to expand on your thought. There's a lot of farms and a lot of barns out there that I'm sure have not been explored.
What you need to do, and I say this all the time, we used to do it. You get a 3-car wedge trailer open, and you get a pocket full of cash.
That's it.
And you just take off. Don't get on the interstate.
That's right.
Just get on side roads.
And start knocking on doors.
And start knocking on doors. And you know, don't wear a bulletproof vest, but be cognizant that you may be a stranger knocking on someone's door.
Yeah.
Usually it's okay to knock if there's something for sale in the yard. Or the couch that says free.
Right.
Yeah.
Or if the car is out in the yard rotting away, you know.
Then there's a good chance that you're not the first person who stopped there.
Right.
And what you want to do is you want to go deeper. So you want to say, yeah, I know you've probably been offered and you're probably not for sale. Otherwise, it wouldn't still be sitting here after all these years. And you would have had a for sale sign on it if you were really offering it for sale. But do you know anybody who's got anything? Well, yeah, old Bob has a place over here. And
or stop at that produce stand along the road and say, yeah, you know, anybody around here has got any old cars?
Yeah, and old cars can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So it's one of those things that you'd be surprised what you find. And one, you know, we always say we always go look at. Anybody, somebody calls and says they have a collection of cars to go look at, we always go look at it, even if we think, well, it probably doesn't fit what we're looking for, or maybe it may not be the right mix, because you never know what else that's going to lead to. Oh, by the way, my buddy has a couple of, you know, really rare. There were these English cars, AC something, and we don't really know what they are, but they got a big, I guess they have a Ford motor in them, and they ought to be kind of cool. So, anyway, thanks for joining us on the show this week, and we appreciate Tim McGrain, the CEO of M1 Concourse, for spending a little bit of his morning here with us. And next week, we have Justin Bell, race car driver, and father was Derek Bell, who is sorry, Derek and Justin. We'll see you next time on the Classic Auto Mall Show.
You've been listening to the Classic Auto Mall Show with your host, Stuart Howden. Executive producer, Steve Saphir. Produced and engineered by yours truly, J.R. Russ. Available on ClassicAutoMall.com, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Music courtesy of the Pat Travers Band. For tour dates, contact, and stuff, visit PatTravers.com. Produced by Car Smarts Media. Copyright all rights reserved.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.